Hello and welcome again to another edition of Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com and BlogTalkRadio.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hello, John.
Hello.
And hello, Devin.
Hi.
We're back together to talk, and we've got a few things. We're fresh off of a Jazz game tonight, too, to talk, so... It seemed like we were just this way last week against Dallas. So do you want to start with tonight's game?
You know, it was a good game until they just kind of fell apart there at the end. I really thought they were going to pull it off, but Charlotte's a really good team, and it really sucks that now that we have Hayward back, we don't have George Hill.
Yeah, it does. And Charlotte, yeah, just as a disclaimer here, or I don't even call it a disclaimer, Charlotte is good. In fact, they're off to their franchise best 6-1 start. They have never been off to this good of a start. So they're playing very good basketball. Kemba Walker is playing insanely good basketball. And tonight the Jazz had an opportunity and it slipped away from them.
Yeah, Charlotte had the second best defense in the NBA going into that team. And yet when the Jazz scored 58 points on them in the first half, I was feeling pretty good. You know, there a lot of people looked good tonight at various spots. I would say that Lyles looked better than he has looked in most games. For a long time there, it looked like Hood and Hayward were clicking. You know, Gobert was very active. He had 7 points, 11 rebounds, 3 blocks. And that seemed to be like about what he's going to be doing. Hayward was just a total stud. He just looked like he was owning it whenever he was out there.
He continues to be. This is game 3. He's back and he's looked like that every game to this point.
Yeah. You know, ultimately it kind of did come down to Shelvin Mack couldn't hit a shot, and then the bench, other than Lyles, couldn't really perform. I didn't realize it until after the game, because I was like, why isn't Exum in there at the end of the game? But then I see he was a minus 12 for the night, so he was part of the problem too.
Well, and to tell you the truth, you know, and Exum's another guy that I thought has been getting better as a season, but I thought at moments tonight... And again, I only watched the second half, and really I missed the final 5 minutes of the game. But Exum in the third quarter actually looked quite comfortable. And I know this is tooting our own horn. I know we've talked about this. Exum at the point, he looks much more comfortable than he does at the two. And there were stretches tonight at the point guard when he had the ball in his hand where he looked comfortable at Exum level again and really looked good on that first step off the dribble drive. But you know, like you said, he was minus 12. Kemba Walker, I thought, was held in check for most of the game. And then there was a point, and you saw this on Twitter, I'm sure you and I were talking, but another guy and I were talking that there was a point where Mac, I thought, was guarding Kemba really well. And then went to the bench at the same time or thereabouts as Gobert. In comes Lyles, in comes Exum. Exum guarded him well, but when he pushed him to the paint, Lyles or somebody didn't pick him up, and he either had an easy shot off of a screen or he passed to the baseline to a corner three, you know, from Kaminsky. Situations where the defense had lapses, and you can't put it on one guy. I almost wonder if it was victimized by lineups. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I feel like the Jazz.
And it is important to remember that the Hornets are the second best team in the East right now.
Yeah.
So it's a game. You know, I predicted that it'd go 2-2 on our last episode, and at the time, I didn't realize that Hayward was going to come back, and then Hill was going to instantly go down. If they had been able to have Hill, I think they would have won this game. I just think they had it until the very end, and I think Hill would have been crucial in that. But we got another week without Hill. And when you consider the way the Jazz started this season with all the injury questions that they were having and injury problems and how they haven't been able, I think they've only had the 2 games where they've had a fully healthy lineup. you know, other than Burks is always going to be out. And it's okay that they're missing some time with Diop, but it became very clear against the Knicks and the Sixers, asterisks on who those two teams are, but it became very clear that this is going to be an awesome team when we're going to have Hill, Hood, Hayward, Favors, Gobert. Altogether.
I agree. And you put asterisks on those two teams, but I'm going to go back to some of the rhetoric we've heard on the radio the last couple of days, and I'm going to agree with it. New York, the Jazz have always had a difficult time winning in New York, much less winning handily. And they won handily on Sunday. And then to go back to back, and I realize, asterisk on Philly, Philly's not a great team, but the Jazz, who have struggled, and I heard this from Spence Checkets the other night, the Jazz who have struggled against, you know, some of the lower tier teams and not putting their foot on the pedal, really put their foot on the pedal for against Philly, and they won, running away as they should have. The four losses they have, chalk them up. You have Portland on the road, Clippers on the road, San Antonio at home.
And you still didn't have Hayward in that game.
Yeah, and it was trying to beat San Antonio for the second time in three games. That's not going to happen. And then you had Charlotte on the road. Three road games against three playoff opponents. I don't – what else do you want? I thought the Jazz have played very well to be at 4-5-4 right now.
Yeah, we knew they had a really tough schedule to open the season. They still have two more road games to go. Those teams will be easier than what they faced tonight, but it's still all these road games. And you also got to appreciate that if they're going to have four losses, all of them are against playoff teams. Okay, you can deal with that. They've lost to playoff teams. They've beaten playoff teams so far this year.
Yeah.
And, if they can survive these road trips and get Hill back, I don't think he'll be back by the Monday home game against Memphis. It'll be nice. But it's not that bad a schedule to be missing Hill.
No. And for everybody that wants to downplay 5-4 right now, guess what, guys? One of those five wins was on the road in a hostile location where most teams in the NBA have been unable to win for the last, 5 to 10 years or longer. And oh, by the way, the Jazz haven't won there in 6 years. So that win over San Antonio almost trumps a meh 5-4. It's an impressive 5-4.
Yeah, and you know what's funny about even that Lakers win is starting to look like a quality win.
Yeah, it is.
The Lakers are 4-4 right now. So
including wins over Golden State.
Maybe Lakers will be fighting for that eighth spot.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. So looking ahead, like you said, you got Orlando and Miami back to back. They finish it off with the Florida trip. And then they come back home at Memphis on Monday. How do we see the next three games play out?
I am going to say they win all three. Both Orlando and Miami are not looking good so far. And then the home game against Memphis, I think the crowd will be there. It'll help them enough that they'll get by, even though it is tough. I don't know if Conley and Gasol will both play in that game. It'll be tough if they do. If either of those guys sit out, then it should be easy. But I'm still going to say that they're going to win all those games.
I agree with that. Devin, any thoughts? Do they go 3-0 over their next three?
Really, they should. I always get a little hesitant to have them start racking up that many wins in a row. You know what I mean? I thought they should win at Charlotte, and they very well could have if there wasn't a collapse at the end. But, you have to look at Orlando. I think I haven't seen them. I would expect they're still trying to figure it out with that trade they worked with Oklahoma City.
To bring Ibaka and right. Send Oladipo, right.
And when you think about Miami, you have to realize this is a completely different Miami team than what we were thinking of a couple years ago.
No Dwayne Wade, no Chris Bosh.
No LeBron James.
They're really not a very good team. I mean, Whiteside's And yeah, Whitesides is it.
And they've got Winslow. And
right.
Is Dragic still on that team?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've got pieces, but really the Jazz are so deep. They should be able to pull that game out. There's no one there that I think is a killer that's going to take over the game. And Memphis, I think Memphis is aging. And while they have Conley and they have Parsons and they have Gasol, I think about Zebo getting older. I just don't see it there. I'm not as intimidated by Memphis as I was 2-3 years ago.
Yeah. So no, I'm with you.
With this, I am going to say, yeah, they should win all three games. Now, if they do, that's to be determined. I'm not sure which one they drop, though. I mean, if you had to pick one.
Memphis would be the game I'd pick if I had to pick one. But I still think they should win that game at home.
See, and my only concern would be the back-to-back, really.
But they just won a back-to-back against right. should-be teams 2 nights ago.
Right. But you're talking about the Sixers.
I know. Well, and here's my final point I'll make on this is playoff teams. Okay. And John, you can agree with me or not on this. I mean, we've watched enough and Devin, we've watched enough Jazz over the years. We've watched enough playoff teams. There's winning streaks define where you're going to be come playoff time, right? If you're a team that's winning between 5 and 10 games in a row and have stretches during the season where you're winning 5 and 10 game up to 10 game win streaks, you should be a middle of the pack playoff team. You should be right there. If you're winning 10 to 15, 16, 17 wins in a row, like the Jazz used to do when they went to the Western Conference Finals, you're an elite team. Jazz aren't there with the elite status, but I think we should see a point in this season where they're going to go and reel off 6 to 10 in a row. They have to, and I think they will.
Yeah, I think that's when they will reveal themselves to be.
Yes.
It's kind of like if I would look at the stretch between Thanksgiving and mid-December, that's when they should really establish themselves. And that's when they'll say that, yeah, we're in the top five in the West rather than, okay, those guys are the top four in the West, and now you have a couple other teams to consider, and we're among them.
Right.
I would think by mid-December we'll know if they're are a road playoff team, or we are a home playoff team.
Right. And the end of January, beginning of February, heading into All-Star break is where the separation really comes. At that yeah. point in time, you know the identity, you know what to expect come March and April, and you know where you're going to be come the end of April for the playoffs. No, I agree completely.
Yeah, really right now the West is your top four, and then they're really the next three, I would say, the Jazz, the Blazers, and the Rockets are all kind of right there going, we're the next tier. Yep. And then you have a bunch of 8-seed contenders.
Agreed.
Agreed. So,
all right. You threw in poor Jeff Hornacek. Would you care to elaborate on that?
Well, the Knicks had the worst defense in the NBA, and so Hornacek announced that he was going to have assistant coach Kurt Rambis be totally in charge of their defense. And I just feel so bad for him because, you know, the Knicks are still the Knicks. And it's not going well. And yet he has Phil Jackson as a boss. And part of his requirement for getting the job in the first place was he had to keep Kurt Rambis on his coaching staff. I just don't really feel like this is Jeff's team. I don't feel like he's able to really make these decisions. And if the Knicks would stop being so Knickish, I think he would be able to find more success. But it just doesn't look like it's going to happen.
With that, no, I agree with you. With that being said, though, watching them play the Jazz on Sunday, if I'm a Knicks fan, I'm actually somewhat optimistic about what the future holds for the team on the court, at least from mm-hmm. from a performance standpoint. I mean, they lost to the Jazz, yes, and the Jazz really just took it to them. But you know, Porzingis, you already know what you're getting from him, and he's only going to get better. And he's proving he can get better. And then Carmelo has done, you know, Carmelo's Carmelo. What do you expect there? And then they've got a really nice young nucleus. And Jeff can work with that. And I think there were moments against the Jazz on Sunday where I just sat back and went, wow, Jeff, you've got these guys playing really well. And then there were moments where the Jazz just took over and you were just like, all right, it's the Knicks again, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I feel bad for Jeff, but on the same token, if he plays his cards right, I think he's heading in the right direction with that team. And you got to hope that Phil gives him the reins a little bit to be able to do that and doesn't overstep his bounds as manager.
Well, I just look at their defensive stats and it's just not good.
No, it isn't.
They are a bunch of turnstiles out there when it comes to that. And the way they try to win is to just outscore the other team. And all the guys, they don't have enough talented shooters on their team to be able to do that. Their opponent has scored over 100 points in every single game so far. So,
yep,
they need to do something.
I agree. So, all right. Well, let's wrap up the NBA right there. Not a lot to talk about, but we'll wrap it right there. We do have one more topic, but let's jump over and discuss that in listener questions. So this week we had one listener question, but it jumps right into the topic that has been swarming Jazz Nation for the last 24 to 48 hours, Trey Burke.
It was mutually beneficial for the Jazz and Burke to part ways. It sucks that the Jazz spent two first round picks in order to get Trey Burke, and it just ultimately worked out that they're only getting a second round pick as compensation to see him go. But he really did need to go. I just found it unfortunate when interviewed about it that he had this quote about how the Jazz were holding him back and trying to break him. And I hope people just don't start booing Trey Burke when the Wizards come back to the Energy Solutions Arena. But, I don't see it. I thought it was a dumb thing to say. He was the starter for the first, and he didn't show any improvement between year one and year two. The team was obviously much better once he was taken out of the starting lineup. And, he had all the opportunities in the world to earn his starting position back, and he didn't do it. He just wasn't a good enough shooter to cover up for his other sins. You know, if he was a really good shooter, then his, defensive inefficiencies would have been something you deal with. But he was too short. He wasn't that good a defender. He wasn't that good a shooter. And, I don't see why that's the Jazz's fault. I thought they gave him every opportunity to succeed, and it just didn't work out. He just isn't good enough to be a starter in the NBA. And now in Washington, I look at Wizards Twitter, and a lot of them would be perfectly content for Trey Burke to just get a lot of DMP CDs. So it's not working out too well for him over there either.
And we've had lots of conversations over the last 2 years about Trey Burke. And for the most part, we've done well to be a sympathizer for him and defending him. And I'm one of those that has really tried to do that a lot. But reading what I did and watching the video about it frustrates me, because you expect it from Cantor when he walks away. Trey was the last person we expected it from. I mean, we all talked about it. Didn't we talk about this a couple weeks back where we, the guy we expected from is his dad, right? Not Trey. Mm-hmm. And then Trey opens his mouth and here it comes.
Yeah, I thought Trey was totally professional the whole time. I had a lot of respect for the way he carried himself. I would also say that, he's young and here is this quote, and let's not blow him up for it, because when Cantor left and he said the things he said, there's a lot more to that.
Yes, there was.
Because after he left, that's when, and he said that, then you suddenly heard everyone just finally say what they really thought of him. You could tell most of his teammates were glad that he was off the team. Coaching staff was relieved he was gone. A lot of the Jazz media guys who were very discreet, shall we say, while they're here, but once they leave and they do something like that, then they're like, all right, this is what was really going on. And so Cantor was a different story. And even then, I would think that the booing with Canner will stop. I mean, I hope.
Well, I don't know. This is coming from a fan base.
Sick that Jazz fans still boo Darren Williams.
Yeah, so. I was going to say this is coming from a fan base that can't seem to let something go that happened 6 years ago almost. So, no.
There's really no one left, I think, that really should still be booed as far as ex-Jazz are concerned. And most guys get cheered when they come back. I mean, when Big Al came back, he was cheered. When Millsap came back, he was cheered. Korver. All the guys that were great on the team. Marvin Williams.
Rajah Bell might be the only one that...
Trash or, which one?
I said if Rajah Bell ever came back in a uniform, I think he might be might have trash thrown at him.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know what he's doing now. Isn't he? I think he's a analyst.
Yes, but he has said some things even over the last 6 months. I heard him on NBA TV or wherever it was, really, really tear apart the Jazz organization too. So that's a man that I think Jazz fans, if they ever see him in Salt Lake again, might let him have a piece of their mind too.
Yeah, probably.
I'm with you though. I'm with you. I mean, Trey Burke's young, and I think right now he's in the abyss of frustration with his game, and with his game not being up to par and not being where it's at and struggling to find it, even in Washington, even in a new environment. And so, saying what he did, I think, was an opportunity to lash out, and I just don't think that deserves that kind of treatment from Jazz fans. It just doesn't. It's good. Just give him love and let's move on.
Yeah. I was just looking around the NBA tonight. The Knicks actually did beat the Nets tonight and they held them to under 100 points. So wow. Maybe they've turned the corner. Even though it's the Nets.
Devin, do you have any thoughts on Trey Burke, that subject, before we wrap that one up?
Do you really want me to go there? I don't know why you say something now.
Right.
It's the same thing with Rajah Bell. Why are you saying something now? It's done. It's over. Shut up and move on. Do your job. You know, the Jazz tried to break me. Give me a break. You know, you can say what you want about the Jazz trying to hold him back. But honestly, if he had played up to his hype, if he had played up to the potential that the Jazz saw in him when they moved up to get him.
Which, mind you, was Dennis Lindsay as much as it was Kevin O'Connor. They both moved up in that draft to get him.
I don't know what he thinks he's going to accomplish at this point. It's a bad look. You know, honestly, unless there's a real reason to say something with bad blood between you and an old team, it's basically him sitting there complaining about his ex. Let it go. Move on.
Right. Nope. Well said. And with that, that's the end of listener questions. We didn't have any others, right?
Nope.
All right. So let's move the mic over to Devin. Devin, you got quick hits. I know you got some. You've always got something good to throw at us.
We'll wing it. Okay. I saw there was an article in The Undefeated, part of ESPN. That said, Greg Popovich is the NBA's most woke coach.
Most this, what?
Most woke.
Most woke coach. Okay.
Okay. I'm not sure I follow you.
Explain what woke is, white man.
Really?
You don't know? You've never heard that before?
Woke is being aware, knowing what's going on in the community.
No, I can't say I've ever heard that before. Sorry.
Okay.
So now I know.
Is that surprising to you?
No. No, it isn't.
John? Surprising? No?
Surprising? No. I think there are other coaches who are making their bid. Stan Van Gundy might take the mantle once Pop leaves. But yeah, I can totally see that, and I'm not surprised by it.
So
it's like, which coach would you say is more than Pops, you know?
Very, very true. I was looking through the article, just kind of skimmed through it. From what I read, it seemed like a really good insight to him being more than just a coach and almost like a life mentor. You know, you think about coaches in college and they talk about not only molding these young men as basketball players, but as adults and good citizens going forward. And it seems like Popovich is doing much of that still with guys who are in the NBA. I mean, you're talking guys 30 plus in some instances. I just thought it was really interesting and kind of a good insight into who he is, where we have a little bit of mystery with Pop when it comes to the interviews and so forth. So if you get a chance, wanted to bring that up, maybe you'll check it out.
I will now read that.
As will I.
All right. Let's talk about James Harden, shall we?
Do we have to?
Best point guard or best player? I am. That's what he says.
That's what he said?
He said.
He said it.
That's your quote. Best point guard or best player? I am.
Wow.
Is that a good mentality for him and for the Rockets, or is that something that could maybe cause some problems for them down the road?
No, really.
It won't cause problems because it's a non-issue. It's something that I think most people just laugh at, look at, and move on because it's James Harden, pretty much.
Here's the thing. What would Michael Jordan say if he had asked him that question?
Well, he did say it on a couple of occasions, if I remember correctly.
I mean, there are some players that can get away with having that attitude.
Michael was one.
I think Michael Jordan was like that. And so James Harden, if he's going to say that, his play is backing it up. He is right now, 31.6 points, 12.7 assists, 7.1 rebounds, 1.3 steals. He's shooting 50% from the floor, 41% from three. I can't argue with him.
Well said.
Russell Westbrook might argue with him a little bit.
I support Russell Westbrook in arguing with him. I will rub his shoulders and send him out into the arena and say, yeah, go argue with him, champ, because that is a valid argument.
That would be a fun
but
argument.
But I don't blame Harden at all for
Now, does that make James Harden any more fun to watch than ever before? No, he's still the single most unwatchable player in the NBA for me. I can't watch him. But, you know, that's...
Answer that more educatedly once I've actually... I haven't actually watched any Rockets yet this season, and it is D'Antoni. I hated watching him last season, but just seeing what he's doing, I wonder if I'll feel differently this year.
Maybe. And maybe I'll backtrack the statement I just made, but I've been feeling that way about Harden for a while now.
Yeah. I did watch half a Thunder's game last week, and Westbrook is awesome to watch.
Yes,
I really enjoy watching Westbrook.
Indeed.
Okay. We talked about this a little bit. I think it was last week. From what I'm seeing, Dallas Cowboys, defensive players are saying that Tony Romo looks fantastic. Does he wrestle away that starting spot from Dak within the next 2 weeks?
I notice you say does he and not should he. Does he?
Last week I think we were talking about should he. What should be done. So
does he, based on the ownership of the team? Yeah, he probably will. Jerry Jones.
Yeah, I gotta think. Does he? Yes. Should he? I mean, they're 7-1.
Without him.
That's not despite their quarterback. I mean, right? Ezekiel Elliott having this awesome rookie season helps, but you know, it's working.
And you know, I had this conversation with somebody at work that the idea in the NFL that you shouldn't lose your job because of injury. We've seen too many things over the last 20 years where that's happened. Hello, Tom Brady, for one. Bledsoe lost his job because of injury. So it's the way of the NFL. Is Jerry Jones the guy that continues to? Yeah, Jerry Jones, I think, puts him back in because that's just Jerry Jones.
Let the coach coach.
Yeah, but Jerry doesn't do that.
But you really should.
That's... I agree, but can we all agree that Jerry does not let his coaches coach in Dallas, right?
That's been his pattern.
Exactly.
We'll find out. So, all right, a little bit of college football for you.
Okay.
University of Washington moved into the number 4 spot on the college football rankings.
I anticipated they would.
Do you agree with that over a one-loss Ohio State with a stronger strength of schedule is the argument there?
Yes, I do.
So far, yes.
Going with the dogs. Okay. I like it. Just a little preview of what's coming up this weekend. The Utes will face off against Arizona State in Tempe. Utes are 7-2. Arizona Sun Devils are 5-4. Who are you going to take in this one?
Utah.
Yeah, I'd take Utah.
I like it. Which means we have to ask the question. The BYU Cougars, who
I'll already tell you, BYU,
are going to face off against some very tough competition. Another 5-4 team, the Thunderbirds, and not just any Thunderbirds, the Southern Utah Thunderbirds. Who are you taking in this one?
The Cougars.
I think I'll take the Cougars.
And I might as well throw it back to you, Mister. You saw the Thunderbirds at the beginning of the year, Devin. I am assuming you'll take the Cougars in this one too.
Honestly, I did not see them at the beginning of the year because there's some sort of disagreement between the Pac-12 network and a
right.
certain television provider.
This is right. Okay, my bad.
All right. I think that's good for quick hits.
Yep, it is. Before we move on to pop culture, John, David Locke just tweeted out a couple things for the Jazz game just to mull through. Jazz had 45 uncontested shots tonight, the most they've had in any game all year. In six games without Gordon Hayward, Jazz got 32.5 uncontested looks a game. Since Gordon has returned, the Jazz are getting 41 uncontested looks. There's some interesting stats for you to mull over.
You know, the difference with tonight's loss really was I think they shot like 23% from three.
Yes, they did.
They had the looks. They just weren't hitting him tonight.
Yep. So, all right. Let's wrap up with our final segment, pop culture. John, you had some things, some movies you wanted to talk about tonight, and I'm guessing I'm going to be in the dark here because I haven't seen them yet, so I want to hear what you have to say about them.
Okay. We're actually running short on time, so I'm just going to talk about Doctor Strange.
Good enough.
Doctor Strange is part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It fits right in, and yet I found it one of the more enjoyable entries. I actually like all of the Marvel movies. They're just kind of varying degrees. Doctor Strange was pretty funny, surprisingly so. I thought, it's not quite Guardians funny, but it had a lot of humor in there, which I enjoyed. The visuals are just incredible. There's so many visuals they're doing with, you know, bending reality and turning everything into Escher paintings and such.
3D or 2D?
So I loved all that. I saw it in 2D. I imagine it's incredible in 3D. You probably feel like you take an acid trip if you see it in 3D. And, you know, it had the usual thing of there's a scene in the middle of the credits and then there's another scene at the end of the credits. And then I go home to Wikipedia to find out what the significance of that scene is and go, oh, okay, here's the history. Because, you know, I'm familiar with comic books, but I don't have the backstory of all these characters memorized and such.
Right.
But I thought it was a worthy entry into the universe, and Doctor Strange, it's going to be fun to watch him interact with other characters in future movies.
And cue the questions on Twitter after this show is released tomorrow. John, how do you know what it is to be like on an acid trip? Anyway.
He made me want to see it in 3D.
Yeah.
Just want to know what that's like, so...
All right,
the safe way to go about it, right?
And I've heard it from everybody. Uh-huh. Need to go see Doctor Strange. So, yep, now that I've talked to you, even more so, I need to go see it. And obviously in the theater, not wait for it on DVD, right?
I would say it's one of the more visually impressive Marvel movies, and therefore I think it is best to see it on a big screen.
I have one question about it before we close.
Okay.
You've seen Inception. You've seen Doctor Strange. Yep. Both have similar concepts as far as the realities. How would you rank the two of them to each other? I mean, is this visually even more pleasing than Inception was?
I have a hard time answering that because Inception is like one of my favorite movies of all time. So it's hard to say, but it is very similar. With the bending of reality, there is a lot of similarities.
Okay.
But it didn't subtract.
All right. We recording again? All right. All right. Well, that'll wrap it up. Everybody go see Doctor Strange. So thank you all for joining us for yet another edition of Jedi and Germs. It was a shortened event this week. We want to thank you all for listening, as always. You can hook up with us on Facebook and Twitter, Jedi and Germs. Find us on iTunes and Stitcher, Jedi and Germs. Of course, on Blog Talk Radio and on TornbySports.com. Look us up, email us, contact us, tweet us. Join the discussion. We always love your feedback. Thank you for joining us. As always, John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.